government regulations, which were created to protect employees, are actually hurting them.
Regulation after regulation.
Until the government understands that they have to create an environment suitable for us to keep growing, we're going to stay in this recession a long time.
The federal government has blocked efforts to expand the ride-sharing.
The owners say the restaurant has succumbed to the crush of government regulations.
We have seen an unprecedented explosion of new regulatory activity.
$1.8 trillion. That's how much business
and bus companies to close.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be changed. There is red tape that needs to be cut.
The regulations are...
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep...
Is this really the best we can do?
This is Free Lunch, the podcast of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project. All expressions of opinion on this podcast are those of the speakers.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to an extra special episode of the Federalist Society Free Lunch Podcast for the Regulatory Transparency Project. Visit the RTP website at regproject.org, regproject.org, to subscribe to our newsletter and to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. My name is Devin Westhill. I'm the director of the RTP and the host of the Free Lunch Podcast. This Free Lunch Podcast is entitled Regulatory Scorecard. The plan is to evaluate the dramatic shift in regulatory affairs at the federal level last year and to look ahead to what we might expect going forward. I am pleased to announce that there is no better person to join us today for such a conversation than our Free Lunch Podcast guest, Naomi Rau. Naomi Rau was confirmed by the United States Senate on July 10, 2017, to be the Administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs within the Office of Management and Budget. Immediately prior to taking the helm at OIRA, Administrator Rau taught and wrote in the areas of structural constitutional law, administrative law, and legislation and statutory interpretation as Associate Professor of Law at the George Mason University Antonin Scalia Law School. Administrator Rau also served as founding director of Scalia Law School Center for the Study of the Administrative State. Administrator Rau's scholarship and leadership has been informed by many experiences, including service as a member of the Administrative Conference of the United States and on the Governing Council of the ABA Section of Administrative Law and Regulatory Practice, as well as co-chair of the Section's Regulatory Policy Committee, and also having served in all three branches of the federal government. More on Administrator Rau's professional background can be found at regproject.org. In a moment, I'll turn the floor over to Administrator Rau. Before I do, I remind everyone that the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy initiatives, and therefore all expressions of opinion on Free Lunch Podcast are those of our featured speakers. Administrator Rau has agreed to answer questions after her remarks, so please be prepared with any questions that you might have prior to the start of the Q&A period. Administrator Rau, thanks for being with us today as our Free Lunch Podcast guest. You have the floor.
Great. Thank you so much, Devin, and thanks to the Regulatory Transparency Project at the Federalist Society for having me for this podcast. So in my remarks today, I want to talk about the regulatory reform efforts of the administration and focus on three main points. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've done in the past year, you know, what we plan to do in the coming year, and some of the principled reasons why we believe so firmly in our regulatory reform efforts. So let me just start by saying a little bit about what's happened in the past year. I think the past year, 2017, was in many ways a banner year for regulatory reform. Soon after taking office, you know, the president called for the elimination of two regulations for each new one, and he imposed, at least for fiscal year 2017, a zero regulatory cost cap for the executive agencies. And when that executive order was issued, there was some skepticism. But I think when you look back on the past year, we can see that that executive order really focused attention on the big problem of cumulative regulations. The president was very clear in directing his agencies to deregulate, and that's what has happened. So I think one of the... So how have we done this? I mean, what do we do? I think one of the most important outcomes from this is slowing the production of new costly regulations. And the administration issued only three significant regulations in fiscal year 2017. And so that is an important part of our effort to change the regulatory culture. We also withdrew or delayed more than 1,500 planned rules. And, you know, now those are rules in process, but I think it demonstrates the magnitude of what has been halted or postponed. You know, normally there's a kind of inertia in administrations. You just sort of keep going with whatever's on the agenda, but we've pulled things back and are carefully reconsidering what the direction, the scope, and the content of those proposed regulations. And at the end of fiscal year 2017, we eliminated 22 regulatory actions for every one new regulation, of course, far exceeding the two-for-one. And according to OIRA's own quite conservative calculations, the total net savings of those efforts was over $8 billion, which again, of course, goes well beyond the zero regulatory cost cap. And I think, sometimes $8 billion doesn't sound like very much in the federal government, but I think it's important to consider the context of that, which is in part that historically regulatory costs have increased during administrations of both parties. And in the last administration, in just their last 8 months, they imposed over $15 billion in annualized regulatory costs. So we've really kind of turned that ship around. And my office's role at OIRA, we have been working very closely with the agencies on their regulatory plans and agendas, talking with them to ensure that they are proposing regulatory and deregulatory actions that are consistent with the president's priorities. And I think one of the things we've seen that's been a good development, I think in part because of the two-for-one and the regulatory cost caps, there's a kind of healthy competition between the agencies on some of their reform efforts, and they're keenly aware of who's implementing some of the greatest reforms. And, there's been a lot of transparency behind what we've done. At the end of the fiscal year, at the end of the calendar year, we published each agency's cost savings numbers and their projected cost savings for fiscal year 2018, which are even substantially more negative than they were in the past year. So, I was just confirmed, as Devin mentioned, in July. It's been a very busy, 6 or 7 months. And we've been implementing some of these wide-ranging reforms with a very small staff at OIRA who have been really incredible. And they've been working hard to get this done, working with other civil servants across the federal government to implement the president's executive orders in a way that is responsible and careful and transparent. And, while we've been working through some of these new reform efforts, we've also sought to continue and to institutionalize other longstanding good government practices. As I said, there's a lot of transparency behind what we've been doing. We have made this information publicly available. You can kind of check our work and see how we're counting deregulatory and regulatory actions, what we are counting as cost savings. So there's a lot of transparency there for people who are interested in all of the details of our efforts. I'd also like to highlight that there's also a lot of continuity between what we're doing at OIRA. We're still following our longstanding principles of centralized regulatory review that are in President Clinton's Executive Order 12866 and the cost benefit standards that are in OMB Circular A4. So even our deregulatory actions have to result in net benefits for the public, right? So we're only pulling back regulatory actions where it is more beneficial to do that than not. I'd also like to say, while I think the counting and the numbers are pretty impressive, our regulatory reform efforts are not always reflected just in the numbers. We are also trying to crack down on bad regulatory practices and to be very conscious of proceeding with all of our actions in a way that is consistent with the law. So for instance, we want to make sure that agencies, of course, have statutory authority before they move forward. It's sometimes a question they haven't heard for a number of years. And so I think it's often important to focus agencies on that question, where's the statutory authority for this? And a good answer is not, we've always done it this way. A good answer is being able to point to the actual statutory language. And, even when agencies have statutory authority, we also want to make sure that they're regulating to solve an actual problem, such as a substantial market failure. We don't want to be regulating, finding solutions in search of a problem. And you know, we are looking closely at their analysis of the costs and benefits, right? We want a fair and reasonable analysis of both the costs and the benefits of their actions. And, you know, and even if we're satisfied with the legal authority and the necessity of regulation, we want agencies to regulate in a manner that is giving fair notice to the public and that respects due process. You know, this is something that we work with the White House Counsel's Office on, you know, to make sure that agencies are not imposing new regulatory requirements through guidance or speeches or website FAQs. And this is a way that we strive to change the regulatory culture, you know, so that guidance is really just guidance, and it's not a backdoor to imposing new regulatory requirements without the process and the accountability that's necessary for a legitimate administrative system. And you know, a lot of the agencies have taken this charge with respect to sub-regulatory guidance quite seriously, and they are working to identify and catalog their various guidance documents, which is, of course, the first step to improving transparency, just even knowing what guidance documents exist. And, you know, moving forward to clean up those guidance documents, you know, getting rid of guidance that may be outdated or no longer relevant. So a number of agencies are undertaking that in various ways. Okay, so that's some of what's been happening in the past year. You know, what's ahead for us in the coming year? We want to continue with the momentum from this past year and some of the success that we've had. And we're also moving now, you know, in the second year, we're looking to work closely with the agencies to identify and move forward with certain, you know, more substantive, serious reforms. You can see in the latest unified agenda, agencies are, you know, have proposed government-wide some 448 deregulatory actions and 131 regulatory actions, you know, which is a better than 3-to-1 ratio. But, you know, I mean, again, I think that's, you know, those are great proposals, and we're also now kind of focused on, you know, where can some of this deregulation have the biggest impact. You know, and we recognize that revisiting some of the most costly and, you know, most significant rules is going to require, you know, some substantial time. Excuse me, because undoing those rules requires further research and analysis and the full rulemaking process. Mm-hmm. So that is a process that is going to continue into this year. And one of the things OIRA can do, I think a place OIRA can add particular value, is working on some cross-cutting reforms where there are multiple agencies involved and a variety of different stakeholders. We can often help with those reform efforts. In my office, we are also looking closely at some of our statutory authorities. So our centralized regulatory review, largely, as I said, takes place under executive orders, but OIRA has a variety of statutory authorities. So we are considering the Paperwork Reduction Act. You know, that is, you know, a statute that's been around for some time. It's an important tool for reducing paperwork burdens. I know that's not like the most headline-grabbing type of reform, but paperwork burdens often impose very costly, costly requirements on individuals and small businesses in ways that are really harmful. And so we're looking closely at the type of burdens that agencies are imposing and how we can streamline those and make those more efficient for the American people. OIRA also has some important authorities under the Congressional Review Act, which, as I'm sure many of the listeners are aware, has been used many times in 2017. So this is something that Congress is taking very seriously. But under the CRA, all agencies, and important to note that includes independent agencies, have to submit their rules to OIRA for a determination about whether the rule is major under the CRA, which can mean in part that it imposes costs of $100 million or more. So that is a statutory obligation that we have. And, of course, if an agency fails to comply with the CRA, that can threaten the validity of their rules. And as I said, it's quite apparent that Congress is taking this seriously. So, you know, I think as part of our obligations under the CRA, we can maybe, you know, it's another mechanism for promoting more cost-benefit analysis as part of that major determination for all agencies. It's also important to us at OIRA to share a message of responsible and beneficial reform. You know, I think we are working to proceed with deregulation carefully. As I said, we apply the same cost-benefit standards to regulatory and deregulatory actions. I think, you know, sometimes people say to me, well, you know, isn't deregulation just about big business? And it seems to me that if you look closely, it's often the case that the regulations that are harmful are put in place by big business or by powerful interest groups. And, you know, regulation can create barriers to entry for small businesses or limit competition. And when it does that, you know, regulation can raise substantially the cost of ordinary goods and services. So what we're really focused on as an administration is lifting those regulatory requirements that are no longer benefiting the American people. So why are we doing this? You know, why do we care? Why do I enjoy my job so much? I think that there's some really fundamental reasons for these reform efforts, and they're both practical and principled. On the practical side, I think lifting excessive government regulation can help stimulate the economy. You know, that's not something we can track at OIRA, but I think many economists and commentators have identified a link between this past year's booming economic growth and the slowdown of regulation. Even the New York Times drew this connection in a front page story a few weeks back. But I think what we see is that, you know, one of the most important practical effects has been a change in the environment. We hear this repeatedly from people that, you know, businesses and individuals are no longer afraid of arbitrary new burdens that might be imposed by a guidance document that just pops up or, you know, impending new costly regulations. And I think that has been very important for the health of our economy and for the freedom that people have to do the things that they're interested in doing. And for me, as Devin mentioned, you know, I have a background as a law professor and teaching constitutional law. You know, to me, regulatory reform is also very much about promoting more constitutional government and thereby enhancing individual liberty. You know, sometimes people say to me, "Are you why did you go to OIRA? It's just, you know, counting up the costs and the benefits." You know, that's an important part of what we do, but I think what happens at OIRA is much bigger than that. You know, and here, and certainly in this administration, we're looking at a much broader sweep of issues. And I know that many of the Federal Society listeners will appreciate that one of the things we focus on is making sure that agencies are staying within the proper role of the executive branch. You know, we have an approach to regulation that we believe is consistent with the law, right? We want to stay within our statutory authority and consistent more broadly with the Constitution. And so I think our reform efforts help promote more constitutional government in several ways. So first, I think having, you know, there's greater democratic accountability through presidential accountability. And regulatory reform is a key component of this administration, and the president has been, you know, directing regulatory policy, you know, sort of at a high level. And the centralized review process helps to implement those presidential priorities and work with agencies to make sure that they are following the direction that was set by the democratically accountable president. As I mentioned too, you know, we are focused on other important constitutional values of due process and fair notice. And so by cracking down on sub-regulatory guidance, we're ensuring that when agencies impose new requirements, they're following administrative procedures that give the public notice and an opportunity to meaningfully participate. I've always thought it was interesting that one of the ways scholars often defend the constitutionality of an expansive administrative state is they've said, you know, well, agencies can promote constitutional values, or they follow something like the administrative constitution. And so there are a lot of articles written about how administrative procedures can replicate constitutional values in our complex modern society. Now, I think it should be obvious, right, that those constitutional values are something other than, you know, of course, the original Constitution itself. But even, you know, even talking about constitutional values, I think often agencies fail to follow even this much thinner version of constitutionality. And so even at least requiring agencies to follow administrative procedures ensures a kind of notice and public participation and reasoned decision making. And then finally, you know, I think, you know, one of the other ways we can promote constitutional government is by really respecting the roles of the other departments of the government. You know, I've mentioned, you know, we want to interpret statutes to mean what they say. And by doing that, we respect the lawmaking power of Congress by not expanding the authority of the executive branch. And now, statutory authority, of course, is often open-ended. But in our view, agencies do not have a blank check from Congress to essentially make law. And, you know, sometimes we hear from agencies, you know, well, we've been doing this for years, and we press them on their statutory actions, and, you know, sometimes they come up short. But, you know, we also at OIRA want to respect the role of the courts in reviewing administrative actions and be mindful of judicial precedents and process. But perhaps most importantly, you know, lifting unnecessary regulatory burdens can result in greater individual liberty. You know, we know that the government regulations can sometimes serve important health and safety goals, and Congress has, through, you know, many different statutes, ensured that we already live in a very highly regulated society. But even against that backdrop, you know, we believe government intervention should serve a purpose. And, you know, there are many regulations on the books that are simply duplicative or outdated or ineffective. And we just see regulations pile on top of regulations, often resulting in a system no one would have designed on a clean slate. So we're looking closely at those regulations and eliminating excesses in order to restore more freedom to individuals and families and businesses. And so really those are the principles that motivate us at the core, you know, a regulatory policy that works by promoting economic growth and innovation and the jobs and prosperity that come with greater freedom. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'm happy to take your questions.
Well, thank you for those initial remarks, Administrator Rao. So let's go to questions now. In a moment, everyone on the call is going to hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. I'll open the floor now. Okay. To ask a question, just simply enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. When we get to your request, you'll hear a prompt, and then you can ask your question or answer questions in the order in which they're received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. Okay, we've got quite a few questions here. Let's go to our first question.
Hi, this is Ben Penn calling from Bloomberg Law. My question is, you know, with your emphasis on transparency and the importance of cost-benefit analysis, how do you square that with OIRA allowing the Labor Department to release an economically significant proposed rule in December on tip pooling that didn't have a quantitative analysis on costs and benefits? And then especially considering that there were reports last week that OIRA did work with DOL on completing that analysis in the rule drafting, only to see that data shelved from the ultimate proposal.
Okay, thank you for your question. Of course, I can't comment on internal deliberative matter. I think, you know, for the substance of the rule, it's probably best to direct your questions to the Department of Labor. I can say, though, that the rule that was proposed, you know, the notice of proposed rulemaking, you know, we would expect to see, we would expect to see the full, you know, quantitative analysis in the final rule. and hope that the comments can shed some light on what the scope of that is.
Well, thank you for your question, and thanks, Administrator Rao, for the answer. Let's go to our next question. If you'd like to join the queue, just enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad.
Yes, Administrator Rao, thanks for holding this call and being on with us. This is Lydia Wheeler. I'm a reporter with The Hill. Bloomberg just asked my question pretty much, but wanted to see if you could chat a little bit about how common it is for the economic analysis to kind of be held over until the final rule. I've noticed in past rules, usually that's something that's put forward in the notice of proposed rulemaking. And also, if you can comment on when is OIRA planning to release its report to Congress on the benefits and cost of federal regulations. I understand that that's pretty behind schedule.
Sure. So I guess I would just point out on the labor question, the original rule from the previous administration did not include a regulatory impact assessment, right, which makes it harder when you're looking to revise that rule. So I guess at least there's some precedent from it from the previous administration. With respect to the cost-benefit report, that should be coming out soon. It's in process. So it should be coming out soon. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, if you'd like to ask a question and join the queue, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. Caller, when we get to your request, you can ask your question.
Are you aware that every form created under the Paperwork Reduction Act requires an extra sheet of paper in it to tell you about the Paperwork Reduction Act? And is this really paperwork reduction?
I am not aware of that every federal form has to include a sheet about the Paperwork Reduction Act. I'm not aware of that. I know they all get a OMB control number, but that's an interesting question. Maybe we should I'll take a look at that.
Simple question, simple answer. Thank you, Administrator. Again, if you'd like to join the queue and ask a question, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. We'll go to our next question now.
Good afternoon, Administrator Rao. Thank you for taking the question. This is Ben Guerrero from Law 360. Just wanted to ask specifically about a guidance that's currently under review by the EEOC regarding sexual harassment. I've been tracking it. It's one that I hear a lot about from business advocates and been under review for about 90 days. Could you give any status as to the progress of the review of that guidance?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't comment on matters that are under review.
Thank you for the question, and thanks, Administrator. Let's go on to our next question now. If you'd like to join the queue, enter star in the pound or telephone keypad.
Hi, it's Richard Satrin from Reuters Regulatory Intelligence. I just wanted to hear what's the scope of your inquiries when you consider the benefit side of the regulation that you're in, you know, how broad ranging is that consideration?
Sure. I mean, I think we consider the benefits, you know, the same way we've always looked at the benefits. And so, you know, deregulatory actions have to meet our same cost benefit standards. So we're pulling back regulatory actions where the benefits of deregulating outweigh the cost. So benefits are still, you know, very much a part of the equation. Thanks for that question.
Yes, thank you for the question. Thank you, Administrator Rao. I think we're going to take a couple more questions. And if you have a question, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. I'll go to our next question now.
Hi, this is Maxine Joslow. I'm a reporter for E&E News, and North Carolina Republican Representative Mark Walker just introduced a piece of legislation that would improve access to agency guidance documents, and I understand if you can't comment on the legislation specifically, but is that a goal that you would support?
I'm not familiar with the content of that legislation, so can't comment on that, but you know, we are very interested in this problem of guidance. You know, I mean, sometimes guidance can be a useful tool in providing clarity and notice to regulated parties, But the kind of guidance we're concerned with is when guidance is imposing some new requirement. Because if you're going to impose a new requirement on the public, then that is usually something that should go through a fuller rulemaking process. And so that is a problem that we're paying close attention to.
Thank you, Maxine. Thank you, Administrator Rao.
So I'm just curious if there are any non-journalists who have questions. I was hosting a press conference here.
Let's see about that. We'll go to our next question now.
I'm sorry. I asked before, what is the scope of the benefits analysis that you're using? How do you measure the impact? I heard you say just that you look at benefits, but what exactly do you look at? Do you look at consumers? Do you look at the businesses themselves, you know, that are regulated? How far does that go? And if you don't mind adding a little bit about what the areas are you're looking at or how that process goes in terms of, you know, how you select the deregulation targets.
In terms of, you know, what benefits are counted, I think, you know, it's hard to say just in the abstract. We follow, there's a longstanding OMB guidance called Circular A4, which kind of sets out the methodology for how this is done. And that's available on our website. But, you know, but we look at all of the fair, you know, the benefits, like who, you know, the different market impacts, you know, the particular people or entities that might be benefited from a particular regulatory or deregulatory action, and how far that goes is hard to say outside the context of a particular rule. In terms of identifying, you know, actions for reform, I think it happens in a number of ways. You know, agencies have been engaging with the public to get their ideas. A number of agencies have had kind of open, you know, they've put out notices for suggestions, and they've been working through those. They've been coming up through the public. You know, agencies have regulatory reform task forces that were set up by the president, and those operate in different ways to identify ideas. You know, at OIRA, because we have a lot of institutional knowledge with our career professionals, they also have ideas for rules that you know, where those rules may no longer be beneficial, and we, of course, share those ideas with the agencies.
That was actually one of the questions that I had, Administrator Rao, based on Executive Order 13777 that establishes Reg Reform Task Force. Does OIRA have a formal role in coordinating with the task forces of the various agencies?
That's a good question. We do not. Those are run, you know, by the agencies. And our understanding, just from talking to the regulatory reform officers, is that they've taken very different approaches. They usually include a mix of political appointees as well as career professionals, and you know, they've kind of had different processes for how they are going to identify their reform efforts. But it's not a process that we really, you know, that we are overseeing or coordinating.
I see. Well, let's go to our next question now.
Hi, this is Alex again with Politico. I was wondering if you could just talk about how this administration treats co-benefits and non-domestic benefits when it's conducting regulatory analyses.
Well, I think that you're going to have to talk to our economists for all the details about that. Thanks.
There we go. Thank you. And Administrator, I know you don't have too much more time, but it looks like we've got at least one more question. But I'd like to actually ask something before we get to that last question, if that's okay. My question is, the President issued an executive order back in April last year, President Trump, and Wall Street Journal actually wrote an article about this. It is that the Treasury, for some unique reason, believes that they're exempt in their regulatory or rulemaking from OIRA review. Do you know about this? And is there a position that you take on this idea?
Yeah. So this is something that we're looking at. The president in April issued an executive order asking Treasury and OMB to revisit this memorandum of agreement that was between the two agencies about certain exemptions for Treasury. And, you know, those exemptions have been interpreted quite broadly over the intervening years. And And so we're in the process of considering that and looking at that question, because I think in 2016, only two Treasury rules came through OIRA review. And, you know, there's certain important principles behind centralized regulatory review that, you know, I think that can benefit all agencies. Thank you.
No, thank you. And let's take just our last question here. Caller, when we get to you, you can ask your question.
Hi, I am not a journalist. Jimmy Conde at Boyd & Gray & Associates. One of the problems, I think, with agency cost-benefit analysis is that they are sometimes really just meant as a sort of press release to support the administration's political goals, not surprisingly, since OIRA is part of the White House. Just to give you an example, I think there's some real serious questions about the market failures used by the prior administration to justify the fuel economy rules. So I wonder if OIRA is taking any systematic steps to improve the quality of agency cost-benefit analysis and ensure that they don't become politicized, although I know as part of the White House that's very difficult to do. And also I just wanted to ask you personally whether you would support cost-benefit review by sort of a truly independent body of economists, for example, at CBO or some other independent entity that's outside the White House.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in terms of improving cost-benefit analysis, I mean, I think that's something we all take very seriously, and I think, you know, in part it's a question of how much, you know, will there is, you know, in the White House and the agencies to take cost-benefit analysis seriously. And so, you know, I guess we try to be as rigorous as possible, and it's a very important principle for me, and I know it is as well for my career staff. And we really respect their judgment on a lot of these issues and push back on the agencies as necessary on their analysis to make sure it's as rigorous as possible. You know, you had a question about whether there should be a truly independent body. I guess I'm skeptical that there can be the existence of a truly independent body that analyzes matters that are inherently based on policy decisions. So I guess that's what I would say in response to that.
Well, thank you for that final question, non-journalist Jimmy, and thank you.
And I have to say, I don't mind talking to journalists, but feel free to contact OMB Communications Department if you'd like to spend more time chatting with me.
Thank you, Administrator. To respect your time, we did want to take that as the last question. But I want to ask, do you have any final remarks for our listeners? If not, that's okay, but perhaps we could give you the last word, Administrator Rao.
Thank you. No, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. I think we're excited about the forthcoming year and looking forward to another good year of pushing ahead with regulatory reform. So thank you for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful. On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, I want to thank our audience for joining us, and of course, you, Administrator Rao, for joining us as our Free Lunch Podcast guest today. I hope that everyone can join us again for our next Free Lunch Podcast call, but until then, so long.
On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to Free Lunch. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play to get new episodes of Free Lunch when they're published. Also, visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org. There, we regularly upload content in addition to our podcasts, such as short videos and papers. And you can join the discussion by sharing your story of how regulation has personally affected you. Until next time, remember, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.